Hello and welcome to the South Carolina Lead. You trust the lead to keep you up to date on important state news, and we've been doing that more often as our state faces the COVID-19 virus. I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode was recorded on July 31st, 2020, from my studio here in Columbia. Just so you know, some of the information in this podcast may have changed by the time you've heard it. This podcast cuts through the noise and gives you South Carolina-specific COVID-19 news and stories. This episode features details on the economic outlook facing our country amid the worst quarterly GDP rate in the post-war era, the latest economic numbers, insight on the pandemic's response by DHEC. We have the latest on what forecasters are saying about America's least favorite named hurricane, Hurricane Isaias. A look at how local women played roles in the national right to vote movement, and more. Additionally, we want to hear your stories, so we sent a voicemail box to hear from you all about your daily life in these uncertain times. Leave us a 1 to 3 minute long voicemail at 803-563-7169. Leave us your name, where you're calling from, and what's going on in your world. Let us know how you've been experiencing COVID-19, if you've tested positive for it, if you know someone that has or they've dealt with it, or if you're unemployed, any number of things going on in your world. We want to know, especially how it's COVID-19 related. So leave us a message at 803-563-7169. Now for the latest in South Carolina. Currently, the spread of COVID-19 is ongoing, not contained, and widespread, according to Department of Health and Environmental Control officials. There have been 1,647 deaths, and currently there are 88,523 cases being reported in all 46 counties as of July 31st at 4 p.m. Just want to point out that last week was our worst week for deaths so far in the state, with 307 South Carolinians dying. So far this week, there have been 133 deaths. Percent positive rates remain high in the state at 19.1%. There are currently 1,516 COVID-19 positive patients hospitalized. 373 of those patients are in ICU, with 237 of them on ventilators. And as we close out July, I want to note that we saw 53% of all the state's COVID-19 cases occur in this month, and 51% of the deaths in July alone. Okay, so I'm assuming you've heard about America's least favorite named hurricane, Isaias. Yeah, it's a fun one to say. I've actually mastered it, which is very surprising. Definitely, you want to keep a close eye on this one, though, folks, especially our coastal listeners. I'm hoping this will just be a big rainfall event, but nevertheless, be prepared for it. I hope you've updated your emergency bags, your emergency plan, especially in light of the pandemic, and you have your food supplies ready for this storm and any potential threats we may face in this hurricane season. I was on a call Friday afternoon with Ron Morales with the National Weather Service in Charleston, and while it's still too soon to talk about exact impacts to our state, there is increasing confidence for some across the southeast portion of the state. And when you listen to this clip, guys, there are some beeps from people joining the teleconference call, so just roll with it.
The generalized track is to kind of scrape along somewhere along the east coast, east central coast of Florida, and begin to recurve north. And then north-northeastward as it gets toward the southeast coast and the Carolinas. Again, don't focus too much on the track at all here. In fact, the uncertainty, track does not dictate where the impacts are going to be. So even with an offshore track, I've already detailed that we could have some impacts, especially with wind and potential for storm surge / inundation, coastal flooding.
Morales said that the updated Friday morning guidance has the storm coming closer to the coast, but would then face strong wind shear that can negatively affect it.
The current track is a little slower and slightly west or left of the previous track. So that's a trend that is not as good for us because that brings it closer to our coast. But there's also a possibility with a more west or leftward track that it could encounter a little bit more upper level wind shear, which would make possibly keep it from getting too strong. So that's something that we'll have to continue to watch. Generally, I think I would say that our confidence is moderate to even getting into the high that this event is obviously going to occur in some way, shape, or form. And I think I could boost my confidence into the moderate regarding some level of impacts, especially for our coastal area and Atlantic waters.
A lot remains to be seen, and as of this recording, the National Hurricane Center's 2 p.m. update said that strengthening is still expected during the next day or so, especially tonight and Saturday morning, during the convective maximum period, when the hurricane will be moving over the Gulf Stream. A lot to keep your eye on, folks, and you can stay up to date on these forecasts by following at SC Public Radio on Twitter, and by visiting scetv.org/weather. There you can find watches and warnings, as well as forecasts from SCETV meteorologists. And we also have some live cameras out there from around the state, so you don't have to go outside if you want to see whatever storms brewing out there. And if there are any press briefings, you can tune into SCETV channels and South Carolina Public Radio stations. Now for some non-weather-related politics news. The South Carolina Department of Education approved reopening plans for another 61 school districts this week. You can find a list of them and their plans in our show notes, scetv.org/sclead. And as a reminder, in order for these to be approved, school districts must meet key criteria set by the SCDE. These criteria include offering both a virtual and face-to-face option, a time frame to review operational plans to move forward towards full 5-day face-to-face instruction, and the establishment of how high-quality instruction and a broad range of student services will be provided. Now again, unlike the emergency remote learning that happened earlier this year, students participating in virtual options will have a daily instructional schedule. They'll receive frequent teacher feedback and face high standards for earning passing grades. Now, finally, to celebrate the 100th anniversary of the passage of the 19th Amendment, which gave women the right to vote, South Carolina Public Radio and South Carolina ETV are broadcasting the series Sisterhood, South Carolina Suffragists, to look at how local women played roles in a national movement that eventually guaranteed more than 26 million women the right to vote. Here's South Carolina Public Radio's Thalicia Eady.
The Upcountry History Museum in Greenville continues to help people make meaningful connections to history. Among the museum's permanent galleries are also special exhibits, like Guaranteeing Her Right, the 19th Amendment, Women and the Right to Vote. It's on display through January of 2021. Its panels of information, photos, and artifacts connect people to South Carolina women who challenged laws that deemed them unequal to men. One of those women was Eulalie Sally.
She was inspired to start using her voice and being a proponent for women's rights.
Christina Hornback is curator of collections at the museum. One of the images of Eulalie on display,
a photograph of her standing with Governor McNair when South Carolina finally ratified the 19th Amendment in 1969.
The museum's exhibit explains that photo marked the culmination of years of meetings, speeches, and lobbying that for Sally all got started in 1909 when she learned about a court case.
Lucy Dugas Tillman, who sued her in-laws, because while she had been ill, her husband deeded their children to his father and mother. And when she got out of the hospital, was surprised to find that she had no rights to her children. And so she sued Benjamin Tillman Sr. and his wife for the rights to regain their children. Eulalie was one of her supporters.
She joined the South Carolina Equal Suffrage League by sending $1 in response to an advertisement she found in a newspaper. She's quoted as saying it was the best dollar she ever spent. By 1919, Eulalie was elected president of the South Carolina Equal Suffrage League. In a 1973 interview with Eulalie Sally from the Southern Oral History Program at the Wilson Library at UNC Chapel Hill, Eulalie talked about the early days of organizing in the state.
We did mostly parades and circuses, publicity stunts. That's yes. What it really was, yes. And it got it.
Yes.
And we made lots of enemies. Men were just furious. Some of my best friends turned completely against me, but I didn't care.
It was the urging of family and friends that got her to attend a national convention. She recounts them saying,
if you go and you meet Miss Cat and Maudwood Paul and Anna Howard Shaw, you'll be inspired and you'll come back home and you'll help with this organization and we'll go places.
And she was inspired.
And it was just a revelation to see the difference between the little women I had known and those big women. And it just inspired me.
That inspiration continued to guide Sally throughout her life as she fought for women's suffrage. She became the first female realtor in the state when she started a business to fund her suffrage activities. And even today, almost a half century after her death, the work of Eulalie Sally is still guiding change in society, and it's only fitting that it involves a piece of real estate. That part of this story you'll find on our website at southcarolinapublicradio.org. I'm Thalicia Eady.
Thanks, Alicia. And you can find more of that series on scetv.org/sisterhood-sc-suffrages. As most of you have heard by now, the economy saw its worst second quarter gross domestic product rate ever in the post-war era. That's right, ever. Really, really bad. Federal data showed a 9.5% drop, or the equivalent of a 32.9% annualized rate of decline from April through June. Federal Reserve Chairman Jay Powell said in a press conference that it looks like the pace of the recovery has slowed since cases began to spike again in June, and said labor market data is also showing a slowdown in job growth, particularly among smaller businesses.
Economic activity and employment picked up beginning in May and right through June, and remain well below their levels because I'd say job gains have reversed about a third of the job losses from March and April, and consumer spending has reversed about a half of the drop. So, but nonetheless, those were sooner and stronger than we expected. So, but what happened then was, along with that positive data, we got the virus increases starting in the middle of June in lots and lots of states around the country. And that brings us to a new point here, which is we need to, in addition to dealing with the health crisis, we have to remember this is really a health crisis, and these are people who are having the coronavirus, and it's taking a terrible toll. So we've got to deal with the economic ramifications of that. So what we're seeing is that we monitor quite a lot of what we think of as sort of non-standard high-frequency data. That's become a very important thing, even more important than usual in the work that we do. And what that data show on balance is that the pace of the recovery looks like it has slowed since the cases began that spike in June. So some measures of consumer spending based on credit card and debit card data have moved down. Recent labor market indicators point to a slowing in job growth, particularly among smaller businesses. Hotel occupancy rates have flattened out. People aren't going out to restaurants, bars, gas stations, pharmacies, and beauty salons as much. Consumer surveys, by the way, which had dropped very sharply when the pandemic arrived and then moved back up sharply, they look like they may be softening again now. There are still some areas of strength. Housing and motor vehicle sales have still been strong. Nonetheless, on balance, it looks like the data are pointing to a slowing in the pace of the recovery. But I want to stress, it's too early to say both how large that is and how sustained it will be.
Nationwide, unemployment benefit claims crept up again for the week ending July 25th by 1.4 million. Here in South Carolina, we continue to see a decline, with 12,194 South Carolinians making initial job loss claims for the same period. That's a decrease of 2,152 initial claims from the week prior. And Dan Elsey, who's the executive director at the Department of Employment and Workforce, said, for the first time since the pandemic emerged in South Carolina, our initial claim numbers have dropped below 13,000. Our economy is gaining traction as business owners reopen with strict safety protocols, recall their workforces, and recruit new employees. We are strongly encouraged by this downward trend in initial claims and the performance of the economy. It's worth noting that about 200,000 South Carolinians continue to receive unemployment benefits. And there is only going to be one ride this year at the South Carolina State Fair, your vehicle. That was a clever headline by Meg Kennard with the AP. Alas, there will be no Ferris wheel or crazy mouse ride, my favorite this year. But organizers announced this week that folks can drive through the fairgrounds for free on October 20th and 21st and enjoy a fair experience highlighting the state's agriculture, history, arts, and culture. And of course, there's a drive-through fair food as well. Just find more details at scstatefair.org. State epidemiologist Dr. Linda Bell said on Wednesday that on average, deaths from COVID-19 occur 2 weeks after an individual develops symptoms. Now, those death rates have been drastically increasing due to the higher cases. but simply avoiding big crowds, wearing a mask, and staying home when you're sick or while awaiting test results can help stop the spread.
And in 4 to 6 weeks in South Carolina, if we routinely and stringently adopt these measures, we can be in a completely different place in a relatively short period of time. COVID-19 testing is available throughout the state, with currently more than 105 testing events scheduled through the end of August. And testing is key in providing information about where disease is occurring within our state, and it helps us to identify hotspots and other key points. But what is really most important is that we practice the daily precautions of mask wearing and staying physically distanced from others, and making sure that you stay home in isolation if you do have symptoms or if you've tested positive.
Bell says COVID-19 positive patients can leave quarantine if they meet these three criteria. At least 10 days have passed, patients are fever-free after 24 hours without medication, and other symptoms have improved. Bell again gave her strong support to counties and municipalities that have instituted public mask requirements.
We can completely reverse our fortunes and create safe environments for our business recovery, for our lifestyle recovery, and particularly for students returning to school in a few short weeks. This is more important now than ever as we move into the fall and winter, when we will be confronted with the flu season. Fortunately, several local governments in the state have been requiring face masks for everyone in public, and as the state's public health agency, we strongly support those measures and those local leaders' initiatives that are centered on protecting the health and well-being of their communities. Many businesses like Michelin are doing this today, and we hope even more businesses and others will rally to support these initiatives even without requirements.
We know that isolation can be a killer, especially of those dealing with substance abuse disorders. That's why the South Carolina Department of Alcohol and Other Drug Abuse Services took early action at the onset of the pandemic by allowing for 14 to 28 day take-home doses of methadone for some 7,000 patients. They increased Narcan supplies and distribution. They also increased treatment teleservices and awareness of virtual recovery group meetings, all critical to helping people out there who are dealing with problems during COVID-19. Sarah Goldsby of Deodis said, with the loss of connection, daily sense of purpose, maybe a loss of a job, general uncertainty, and more issues, that they were aware of potential increases in substance abuse.
We knew people would alleviate all of those feelings, negative feelings, with substances. And in April, we started seeing social media setting norms and supporting new behaviors and culture related to drinking and the COVID circumstances. So we knew we were probably seeing an increase of all use of all substances, not just alcohol, and that this might lead to long-term impact. We did create some counter memes to get out in social media, things that looked similar to this to kind of push back. But during this time, you know, in the use of social media, we were trying to drive people to our website and have them call us. And we did see calls to our office rise, you know, between 25% and 35%, you know, with daily variation. And this was mostly calls from people who were at home with family members. Lots of family members recognizing that people that they were in isolation with have a problem with substance use. So a really interesting time for folks to reach out.
And national data bore out that unfortunate situation as well. Publicly available data suggested that COVID-19 could lead to an additional 75,000 deaths from suicide, alcohol, and drug abuse.
Addiction Policy Forum conducted a national survey of their network of patients, families, and people in recovery between April 27th and May 8th. And the results of this really validated what we suspected people were experiencing. 20% of the respondents to that survey reported an increase in substance use since COVID-19 began. Nationwide, 4% of respondents reported an overdose had occurred in their network since the pandemic began, and they noted the South Atlantic region particularly had a greater percentage of overdose reported. The top emotions reported by respondents were worry, sadness, fear, and loneliness, and 48% of patients and families reported fear of becoming infected as a top concern, followed by, you know, spreading the virus and, of course, social isolation. So the data showed that the presence of continuous stress and triggers and the absence of coping and support mechanisms were really coinciding with emotional distress. And, you know, we knew this would equate to an increase in relapse of folks in recovery from substance use disorder. And then, of course, you know, an indication of why overdoses were increasing nationwide.
In South Carolina, Deodis has been tracking the use of opioid overdose reversal drugs by first responders. The result is we're seeing 50% more suspected opioid overdoses versus this time last year.
You can see a timeline here with an increasing trend line of suspected opioid overdoses during the first 3 months of COVID. And we started the calendar year a little bit higher with overdoses than we did last year. But as COVID hit, it increased significantly. And it's important to note, this is response to suspected overdose by first responders. This is not necessarily mortality. And we're not working with mortality data yet, but we have an indication of what that might be.
Goldsby did say that the state's strong telehealth network has been critical during all of this, which just reinforces the need for expanded broadband in the state. Now, this is our wind-down section where we want to hear from you. Tell us what's going on in your world. Are you going to work? Are you unemployed? Are you on the medical front lines? Are you a frontline worker somewhere else? We want to know what's going on. So leave us a message at 803-563-7169 with your name, where you're calling from, and what's going on in your world. We're interested, and so are other people. So give us a shout. With that being said, AT, do we have any new voicemails?
We got a new voicemail, and it's specifically she's speaking to us, and she's also speaking to my potential unwelcome squatter in my attic. So let's roll the tape.
Roll the tape.
Juicy tape.
Hi, this is Laura from Tomasi. This is from a couple episodes ago, but I heard that AT might have an animal problem on. If you have squirrels, you can't probably find anybody to get rid of them. We had this problem in our house, and I called around, and the animal control people just won't deal with them because they're so hard to get rid of. So the animal control people told me if I wanted to get rid of them on my own, I could try to use flashing lights because that really bothered them. They said you can't catch them in traps because they're too smart. So I ordered a rotary light, like the thing that goes on top of the temporary mail people's car when they're delivering mail, and put it up there. And it was like a little squirrel disco. I didn't hear noise for like 2 weeks. And then I had it like plugged in constantly at night. And after 2 weeks, they didn't matter. They just came and had their little squirrel party. So as it turns out, I had to take that down and do further investigation. And AT mentioned there were four things that could be in his attic. And he only mentioned three on the show. And this was the fourth. It turned out to be rats. So before you go up there thinking you're going to trap a large animal, you might want to put a few rat traps up. And I hate to say it, the best way to catch rats is to get those little tiny fake orange slices in the candy section of the grocery store. I know way too much about catching rats. And you cut it in little, like tiny little pieces, like a quarter inch square, and you stick it on the rat trap, and the rats go straight for it. They will ignore cheese. They will ignore peanut butter. They cannot ignore the orange slices. So AT, good luck. I hope you do find something cuter than a rat in your attic, but chances are if you hear things running around up there, you might want to try the rat traps first. Good luck. Bye.
Oh, Laura, with that squirrel disco life, I'm digging that idea, but I also love those orange slices, so you'd catch me in that trap pretty quick.
I'm a dirty, dirty rat. I love orange slices.
Trying to snatch it before it snaps.
Ooh, I think I could get that.
Broken finger.
We'll have to talk to Sean, our producer, our coworker. I bet he has the perfect candy for catching kinds of varmint, right?
Candy cocktail. With the squirrel disco, I mean, I'm there.
A deadly candy cocktail for any kind of little animal. I mean, Sean obviously loves to kill animals, so I mean, it's just...
gosh. No, if there's candy up there and there's a strobe light, I mean... All we need
You're
is
gonna
a speaker.
Be
I mean, that, yeah, what time am I coming over? Oh, we thought this party was cool. Didn't know. Sorry if you guys are still awake.
Were you invited? Yeah, I'm going to wake up and there's going to be a velvet rope going up into my attic. Be like, what the hell is going on?
These like deep beats going on up there. We're just like, yes.
It's going to be like this, the jellyfish jam when SpongeBob, when the jellyfish lived in his house. Do you remember that? That was a banger of a song. I love that song.
Yeah. So I just finished Dr. Sleep. Very excited about that. Good. Another book down again.
It's very good book.
Yeah, it's great. I enjoyed it. I mean, kept you going the whole time.
Yeah, it's a very good book. I really, really like that book. Cannot recommend it enough.
I need some more book recommendations, even though Goodreads, Dune, if you ever use Dune. Goodreads. Yeah, Dune. But again, I'm all about things that are on like the library's website or Amazon Prime Reading because that's free.
Is Dune not there?
It's been consistently checked out from the library. So
I mean, that's
just a testament to how good it is. Like. I'm not denying that. Yeah. I'm just saying I'm not going to buy it. Or, well, you could give me the books, but doesn't Brenton have them all?
Yes, our lead horticulturist has
Brenton,
my book.
If you're listening
to this, Gavin wants it.
I'll read them then. But yeah, I'm pretty spoiled with the Kindle. I don't know if I can actually hold a physical book.
Your wrists are too weak. I had a big day yesterday. It was New Crocs Day.
Oh.
I bought new Crocs. And so I get there, and the only one in my size is real tree camo.
Yeah.
And I look at that, and I was like, the New Jersey in me was like, I can't buy these.
How could you even look at it? How could you even see it?
I have very good eyesight. And so I turn away, and I took like 5 steps away, and then I was like, you know what? Hold on. I own a truck now.
Yes.
I get to wear these.
Yes.
So I grabbed them, bought them, new Crocs on my feet, still wearing them. This is great.
Assimilation nearly complete.
Nearly complete.
Once you get a lift on that truck.
Oh, I got to lift it, but I got to lift the front
tires
a little bit more than the back. And
yeah,
I got to
put
like
more, brother.
5 or 6 winches on it, right?
Yeah. Get a big LED light on the top. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And go hogging. Go, we go hogging then.
Is that what that's for, to kill hogs?
No, I think it's just for like any, any use, you know, field parties while you're trying to.
What
you know,
is a get, field party?
What's a field party?
What do you
party?
Know that I don't?
Oh, you're gonna, well, you've not assimilated. I'm sorry. You got the camo Crocs now. You can go to a field party. There's usually a keg. I don't know. It's rural.
I like being inside. That's a big thing for me, you know.
Tell other truck drivers that's
I'm gonna be the softest that. I'm the softest truck driver all time.
Well, yeah, because you're not driving a Dodge Ram. Motor Trend's
so
truck of the
soft.
Year
man, it don't even have no hammy.
I just read that I've been eating, I just love these bratwursts from Costco. They come in like a big pack, and they're easy
how
to
many
use
to a pack.
I don't know, like 24 maybe.
Jesus.
And so I just freeze them. And I just read, I've been wondering, like, are they good for you? Are they bad for you? There's a little bit higher saturated fat. Yeah, they're not the best for you, like the bang
of course
for the,
not.
But
they taste good.
Yeah, but I'm like, oh, there's enough protein in there. I'm looking for that. I don't care about anything else, but the
this
cholesterol,
is for your,
the sodium.
You're messing with the recipe for your feed?
Well, I'm just reinforcing the fact that I need to phase it out and go back to just sad chicken thighs and maybe bring back the ground turkey. That was the original feed bag food source.
So disgusting.
Oh,
I mean, we've talked about this before, people need to go check out our Instagram.
Yeah.
Towner and I collabed on a great Gavin feed Photoshop.
Come on down.
It's disgusting. Come on down.
I mean, it's
you're
just
gonna lead, laugh, love it.
It's the fuel. It's the fuel.
It's the fuel that this podcast runs on. Not at least 50% of it, because I would never eat it.
Well, I mean, it's just meat and vegetables. That's the trick.
That's sad. That's sad to me.
Life is
sad. I had to convince you like 2 years ago to start using garlic again.
I mean, garlic's overrated, but it's great with the onions.
That's a hot take for you. Garlic is not overrated.
Oh my
God. It literally kills
vampires.
Let's
see. What can I use here to spice this up? Oh, garlic. Put as much in there as possible.
Yeah, exactly right.
Well, let us know what you're putting garlic on, or what you're eating, or if you've trapped squirrels, or if you haven't. We love that. That was great information from Laura. I think everyone, that was some news to use right there.
That was news to use. And if you have a good squirrel stew recipe, let me know. We could nail 2 birds, 1 stone here. 2 squirrels, 1 stew. Don't
how do
Google
I even
that.
Catch a squirrel?
Don't Google
get,
it.
Like, a BB gun. Let us know how you catch squirrels. Because we can't trap them. We got to shoot them, I guess. Stay up with the latest on SCETV.org and SouthCarolinaPublicRadio.org. And don't forget to support your local newspapers. Also, consider becoming an ETV member. Membership starts at just $40, and if you pledge at the $75 level, you get access to PBS Passport and all the great programming your donation helps support. So again, if you're burnt out from Netflix or HBO Go or all those other things, there's plenty of great content there on Passport. Just become a member. For the South Carolina Lead, I'm Gavin Jackson. Be well, South Carolina. I don't know what that is, so I don't say words I don't know. My mom told me to say that.